Board Game Bros.
All right, hello.
Hello, listeners.
Hello, I am Matt Craig.
And I'm Jeff Craig. We are board game designers in real life.
And brothers in real life.
And this is our podcast, The Board Game Bros. Yeah. Okay. That was a sloppy opening.
But let's hope the rest of the episode isn't.
I'll tell you what else had a sloppy opening. Me playing this game for the first time in a while.
Yeah, first time in a while.
So today we're going to talk about a game.
It's a two-player game, but primarily.
Yeah, 1v1. We haven't really done many games that are built around being mostly a two-player game.
Mm-hmm.
So this is going to be fun.
We've had plenty of games that play well as two-player games, but we've also haven't really had a game that was designed for, like, tournament play as well.
Yep, and so, that game that we are talking about today is BattleCon.
Specifically, Devastation of Undines, which is the second BattleCon sort of set released.
So wait, is BattleCon, like, a system?
It's a series. Each set basically just adds new characters and new gameplay modes.
Okay.
But it all plays with each other. The main difference between War of Undines, which is the first one, and Devastation, is that between the two games, they made the board one space smaller on each side.
For this one, it's smaller.
Yeah.
Okay.
And for all future.
And we should say, this is also the first time we are reviewing or talking about a sequel before we review the original game.
But in this case, it's what we have.
Yes. And I mean, you know, it's a... Yeah. We prefer it.
Yeah.
So would you... How would this game be called? BattleCon : Devastation of Undines? Or is the game Devastation of Undines?
It's BattleCon : Devastation of Undines.
Okay, good to know. So we are talking about BattleCon : Devastation of Undines.
Yep.
Being the punctuation, not the, the human anatomy part.
Yep.
And this game is very interesting. Matthew, can you please tell me the history of this game?
Yeah, so it released in 2013, I believe, through Kickstarter. It was published by Level 99 Games and designed by D. Brad Talton Jr., who, from what I understand, is sort of like one of the heads of Level 99 Games. He designed a lot of their early titles, like BattleCon, Pixel Tactics. And he went on to... He's still designing for the company, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And this game is a prime example of him and Level 99's sort of style of game, which is to sort of adapt another type of game into a sort of grokkable tabletop game format. In this case, it is adapting fighting game video games,
mm-hmm.
like Street Fighter, King of Fighters, Mortal Kombat, Guilty Gear, into a tabletop game.
We get it. You know a
form.
Lot of different fighting games.
Well, I don't know. But, yeah.
Just to go over a little bit about what the game is all about. The BattleCon Devastation of Undines is a fighting game made into a board game. During each turn, which is called a beat in this game, players combine cards from their hand to determine which move their fighter performs. The fastest move goes first, damage is dealt, and the player reduced to 0 life points, or with the least life after 20 turns, is knocked out, and the other player is the winner. But it's not as simple as that, because during each beat, many different things can happen. Some abilities can resolve before damage is dealt, sometimes after damage is dealt. Players can move their fighter back and forth on a two-dimensional stage arena. And you could, if you move, you could dodge out of the range of somebody's close combat attack, or you could dive in close for your own close combat attack. And if your fighter takes any damage during a beat, then there's a chance that you might not be able to counterattack if you didn't put up the proper defenses like Stun Guard, which prevents you from being stunned, or Soak, which soaks up damage.
Mm-hmm.
On top of all of this, the game has 30 unique fighters to it, and each fighter has diverse abilities that can completely change the nature of a fight. And that's the gist of it.
Yeah.
So as we get into strategy and design, we'll talk more specifically about the intricacies of the game. But the gist of it is that it's this fighting game with these unique characters on this stage that is 6 spaces wide, or is it 8? 8 spaces wide.
Yeah.
And yeah, you're moving back and forth. You're launching attacks. Attacks have priority to determine which one goes first. They have damage to deal to determine how much life your opponent loses if you hit them. And they have range, which determines if they hit, if they're close enough for you to hit them. Mm-hmm. And then they have a number of other abilities.
Yeah.
All right. So this game is the prime example of Spike's game.
Spiking, yep.
This game is built for Spikes, I'd say, more than any other kind of demographic.
No.
It really is for the player who is willing to put in the effort in order to outplay their opponent.
Mm-hmm.
Because the way that the game is played, there's a lot of open information and a little bit of hidden information. So there's a deduction that a player needs to do during every turn.
Though it should be noted that when you sit across from a player, you know everything they can do. The deduction comes in what they will do.
Right. And you know this because in this game, so I mentioned that you choose what your fighter does by combining cards. The cards that you can combine are, there are these cards called bases, which both players have the same bases in their hand of cards available to them. And those bases all have, they all have a range, a damage, and a priority number to them. And each player also has cards that are called styles, and these are what is unique to your fighter. So on each beat or turn, you choose one style and one base and combine them. The style will have numbers that modify the base's stats, so you'll get more damage, range, and movement, or priority. And then they'll have additional abilities between the two of them. So you have the same bases, so you can predict that. You have the same, you don't have the same styles, but each player has a cheat sheet of their styles that you give to the other players so that they know what you're dealing with. And in addition to all that, at any given point during the game, there are two bases and two styles that your opponent does not have in their hand, but they instead have face up on the board and they don't have access to them. So knowing all of this, you know all of the bases your opponent has, all the styles they have, you know what they do, and you know which ones aren't in their hand. So at any given point, you can make an educated guess as to what your opponent would do on their turn and base your turn around what that will be.
Yeah.
And that is something that Spikes love.
Yes. Spikes love not only to win, but to win by feeling like they had a big part in it. They want to feel like they had a huge amount of skill mm-hmm. impact the game.
Yeah, they want to feel like they outplayed their opponent. And in this game, outplaying is predicting exactly what your opponent is going to do on their turn and countering it with your own turn.
And outplaying is necessary because if you move first, you have a higher chance of dealing damage and stunning the opponent. But at the same time, if you think you're going to move last, you could try to play cards that give you stun guard, which every player has at least one base that gives stun guard. There's like the strike, which has a low range but a high stun guard, moderate mm-hmm. damage.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also a shot, which has a higher range and a moderate stun guard, low damage.
You can also attempt to dodge attacks rather right. than absorb them if you think that you're going to be going last, because there's abilities like Burst,
yeah, and Dash,
which have, well, Burst has an ability that triggers at the beginning of a beat. Mm-hmm. So it ignores priority almost. It doesn't matter who has higher priority, you still get to do this first, and that lets you retreat a number of spaces. So if you're reading that your opponent is going to have you right where they want you for their attack, then you're going to be able to retreat out of it, even if you have lower priority. And then when it comes back to you, since you've not taken any damage, and you're not stunned, and now you can do your attack.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dash has an extremely high priority, but you don't get to attack the turn that you dash. Instead, you get to run towards your opponent.
Or away.
So you can attempt to get out of the range of the opponent, or you can go towards the opponent, and if you pass by them and end on a space behind them, then they can't attack you either. Mm-hmm. So it's like you're dodging, you're rolling into them, or you're rolling away from them with a dash, to use sort of fighting game terms.
You're moving away from their attack, yeah.
Yes. We were talking a little bit about the bases here. Let's talk a little bit about the characters in this game.
Right. There's a lot of characters.
There's 30 characters.
This is where the meat of not only the game complexity, but also the game design sort of complexity goes mm-hmm. into.
And the strategy of the game.
Which is apt. I mean, when you think of fighting games, you tend to think of the characters and how each character plays differently.
Right. Some characters are keep away characters.
Mm-hmm. Some are rush down that want to get in really close.
Mm-hmm.
And those are pretty much represented in the characters.
Yeah, there's 30 characters, which is insane.
However, they do this really nice sorting thing in the game they have this little sort of helper chart that has 6 stages of difficulty for the characters, as well as, now that I see, the extra game modes.
Right.
Are also
on
there.
They have 5 difficulties.
5, yeah.
There's 6 characters to each difficulty level. And this is just what the designers have deemed their difficulty levels. It's a good indication, I'd say. I think I've played at least one fighter from each level of difficulty.
Yeah.
And it's pretty apt.
Yeah.
But, you know, I like to stick to the level 1 fighters.
That's fair.
At least when we pick it up like this. If we were to play multiple sessions in a row mm-hmm. of this game, and sessions do go pretty quick.
Yeah, which
then
makes
I would
sense,
be since, more willing to try yeah. out more advanced characters.
Since the game is sort of meant for tournament play, where you would go to like a shop or a convention and play best of 3 matches or first of 2 matches, then the game, each session of the game has to be about within 15 to 20 minutes at most. The idea being you usually want to have a single game last that long so that when you do a match, it will last up to...
Whoop. What was that? All right. Something fell. We don't know what it was, but we're still recording.
So it will last... So the match will last up to an hour. And I think that's done really well in this game by, like we said, both having a time limit and just the games go quickly. I don't think in any game I've played of this game that I've actually gone under 10 turns.
Right? Yeah, yeah, I've never gone to time in this game either.
Because even though you have like 20 health to start with, you'll be taking 4 to 5 damage a hit. Mm-hmm. So when you're trading blows back and forth, it can end really quickly, which
yeah,
is good.
if you're trading 4 to 5 blows per hit, then you can assume any game's going to take 10 turns if each player is taking 4 or 5 damage yeah. and it's like trading off, like
exactly.
I hit you, you're stunned, you hit me, I'm stunned, back and forth forever.
Exactly.
And yeah, I don't think when we played it today we even got to 10 turns.
But that's also good because, like most fighting games, it rewards playing a character again and again to really learn the ins and outs of characters.
Mm-hmm.
And having those quick games lets you iterate on your strategy and learn from what you did and how to play the character better
mm-hmm.
really quickly. So it kind of lends itself not only to spikes in terms of how it like plays out in that sense, but how sort of the metagame of the game plays out.
Mm-hmm.
How, you know, everything around the game, from you learning how to play it and playing it in large amounts, it all works well towards that goal.
Yeah. So I'd like to get a little specific now. I think just to help our listeners understand just what all goes into a fight and mm-hmm. what all strategy is derived from a character. I think we should talk about the characters that we played as
right.
today and just get into, you know, what their abilities did,
mm-hmm.
how that changed the way that we played and what strategies we used using this new game's new sort of physics
mm-hmm.
To it. So I'll begin and talk about my character, who was a guy named Gerard. He is a guy that hires mercenaries. So he has one basic fundamental mechanic about him, which is that he starts the game with 3 gold. You gonna sneeze? Okay. He starts the game with 3 gold, and at the end of each beat, he gains 1 more gold. And during a phase called the anteing phase, which happens before players reveal which cards they've used for their turn, he can recruit mercenaries for a number of gold, somewhere between 2 and 7, depending on the mercenary. And once you recruit a mercenary, then you keep them for the rest of the game. So a lot of his abilities revolve around collecting gold and then spending that gold to hire mercenaries. And most of the time, whether or not you collect the gold is dependent on the position of you and your enemy, and whether or not your mercenaries are useful is also determined by where you are in relation to your enemy. So my character had a high focus in mobility. He wanted to be standing in the right places at the right times. And he had a high focus on making sure his attacks hit, because that was the most common way for him to gain gold and hire more mercenaries. And it felt like with my character, his abilities were a little bit weaker than a normal character's abilities, because the mercenaries are a permanent boost to your skills. So as the game goes longer, my character powers up because I'm buying more mercenaries and they're doing more things. So I needed to focus on priority and defense to make sure that either I was hitting my opponent first or I was guarding through my opponent's attacks so that my attack would go off. But I did have one ability that let me retreat all the way away from my opponent, and it had a very high range. And then if it hit, I got to pull my opponent towards me. And that was really useful because I could sort of tell when Matthew was going to use a ranged attack. Or not a ranged attack, a melee attack, a close range attack. So I'd always save it for then, back up all the way. I'd have low priority for the turn because the move had low priority. His attack would do nothing, and then I'd hit him and pull him closer. And then I would gather gold and I'd buy mercenaries. And then depending on how I think the battle was going to go, I'd buy different mercenaries. Some mercenaries deal small amounts of damage over time, depending on how far away my opponent is. So there's a mercenary that says if my opponent's next to me, I deal one damage at the end of my turn. If the opponent's far away from me, I deal one damage at the end of my turn. Other mercenaries help me get more gold or play more defensively, but I typically went for the more offensive picks if I got a good read on my opponent. So that's the gist of my character. Very, very positionally based, because a lot of the times it was like gain 2 extra gold if your opponent's at the edge of the board and you're right next to him, or if you hit your opponent with this close range attack, get 2 gold. And I think in the games that I won because I was successfully able to dodge some of my opponent's attacks, and soak some of my other opponent's attacks so that I could get a good gold boost at the beginning of the game and buy the good mercenaries that helped me sort of eke out a victory towards the end of the game. So Matthew, what, that was my guy. That was again Gerard, and he's considered level 4, an advanced fighter of the 5 levels.
Yep. So I played Oriana, who is a character on the 3rd flight, which is intermediate, and her sort of mechanic is that she begins the game with 6 mana points, which are represented by little tokens, and she can ante those each beat, and depending on how many she anteed, her styles she plays would have different effects. So, for example, one style had a high priority, but actually had negative damage. However, when I anteed mana points for it, it would lower the priority, but increase the damage. So I could trade off by either having a fast attack that was weak or a strong attack that was slow. Or there was also one that if I anteed a certain amount of mana points, then there'd be a number of effects detrimental to the opponent that the opponent would choose to happen. And there's other ones that just sort of increase MP and regain MP, and there is even one that lets me move around the board, but has like no priority and no damage. So it was sort of a weird one. My character also had a lot of styles that had a high range, because the way range works is your style has a plus, your base has a number, and it can be, it's most of the time it's either a single number or it's a range from like 1 to 4 or 2 to 3.
Or 0 to 1.
And you combine the two numbers, if there's one number on one card and two on the other one, then the one number gets added to the two numbers on the other card. So if a card with one priority gets added, or one range, sorry, gets added to a card that has 0-1 range, then their combined would be 1-2. Or if a 2 gets added to a 1-3, it would become 3-5. And if a 0-1 is added to a 1-2, it would become 1-3.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyways, my character had a lot of range and had a lot of on-hit effects that determined how to regain MP. She had one card that could regain MP, but it was only if I lost life that turn. And it could make me lose life myself, but at the same time, you know, I would have to lose any sort of life. So, I know my character had some really big plays the first game we played, because I just anteed a lot of mana and kind of just went with it. But then games 2 and 3, whenever I would ante a lot of mana, that'd be the time where Jeffrey ended up playing the card that backs out of my range or moves away and dodges, and he was able to predict that really well. So I guess I was sort of like a glass cannon type of character that really had to focus more on the one moment you want to put in all of your mana versus just holding out and trying to play it safe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And each character has an ultimate ability. And your character's ultimate ability that you used in the second game was definitely indicative that your character was, in fact, a glass cannon. Because ultimate abilities are abilities you can only use when you have 7 or less health points to your fighter. And yours said that you could pay 10, or you could ante 10 mana to deal 25 damage, which is the most glass cannony thing, especially because in addition you have that other ability that says if you lose life you gain mana for each life lost. So your character was, it was possible to play your character in a style where you tank a big hit, gain your 10 mana, and lower yourself down to the 7 life points so that you could retaliate with your spend 10 mana, deal 25 damage. And since your character has 20 health, and there's probably almost no ways of getting more than 5 damage soak to a character, then that's a one-hit kill for anyone in the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I got that from your character. And being able to dodge your attacks in the second and third games we played was sometimes planned. Sometimes it was luck. I think more than once I was able to either stun you or just barely stand outside of the range of like a 1-2 range attack. I'd be standing at 3 range or something, luckily, which ended up leading to me finding openings. I found that in your character, if you didn't hit, that was hitting people is the most common way for you to get mana. So being able to dodge your attacks was really useful for like keeping you off of your primary resource, which a lot of your character's strength is drawn from. But that first game we played, I was totally shut out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was a bit of stumbling there.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, should we talk about the design of the game?
Sure. Yeah.
So this game is very complicated.
Yeah.
I would say it's one of the most complicated games we've played on this podcast, maybe even more so than Agricola, just yeah. Because it takes, like, some games reward you for being able to read your opponent. In this game, it's a prerequisite to be able to read your opponent.
Yeah.
Which can be a very difficult skill for a lot of new players.
I would say the rules, as you, like, read them, are pretty simple. But it's once you have to figure out how all your cards work together, since you don't just have like 10 cards or whatever, it's combinations of 5 cards with 7 bases. And so you have all these different options.
Well, you have 3 cards and 5 bases in hand at any given point.
Sure. Plus but you also choose which ones you start discarded.
Yeah. And I mean, there's like a quick start rule, though.
True.
Where they say, like, if you don't want to put the thought into it, just discard the yellow and green cards. And
that is a good sort of way to help new players. But it's still, there's a lot of, like, you know, an initial jump.
Yeah, it's a lot to take in. A big barrier. Especially, I mean, yeah, there's a huge barrier to entry because you're expected to predict what your opponent does. That's requisite for this game.
Mm-hmm.
But knowing what your opponent can do is a lot because you have to learn your character and their character right from turn one.
So,
because at the beginning of the game, they have nearly all of their cards available to them, minus the two that you can see. So you have to know what those, you have to know what your cards do in combination with the bases that you have, what they attempt to do for future turns, what your character's whole strategy is, and you have to know that all that information as well for your opponent if you want to win. It's not always needed. I found at a couple points during the time we played today that it was okay for me to just play cards and hope that they worked. Especially at least when you have more life. So I guess that is one thing that the design of the game sort of allows you, is at the beginning of the game, you can take a couple risks. Your character at least had a more snowball-y style, but sometimes my character didn't really have a snowball-y aspect to them. So if you can't snowball, then you have a chance. Or if your opponent can't snowball, then you have a chance to sort of test out the waters with some of your abilities and sort of figure out what your strategy would be.
Yeah. And I do want to say that the fact that this game is sort of tournament ready, it kind of mitigates that because... So to preface, when we were playing, we played three games. And in each of those games, I think both of us had a slightly different play style from the previous game. And that is worth noting that, for the most part, many of the characters can play different variations on a different playstyle.
Mm-hmm. That's
true. Which means that it becomes less about knowing what your opponent's character can do, and more about how your opponent uses their character.
Mm-hmm. I know in the first game, I played more of a rushdown mm-hmm. thing, and that didn't work at all.
Yeah.
Because you totally countered me. The second game, I also played rushdown. But this time I was able to work it a little better. And then the third game was keep away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in tournaments, I mean, you're most likely playing two to three games. So it kind of helps. I mean, like, it is still difficult to get to that point where you can really read your opponent. But if you're at least good at recognizing patterns in other games on how people play, then it sort of ties in quickly to this game.
Mm-hmm. I would say that this is more of a like a intention thing, that games that are intended to be tournament games or that are intended to have deep meta games to them are ambitious.
Right.
And the ambition can be too much in some cases. Like if a game is so complicated that you can only expect to have consistent success with a deep understanding of it, like a game like a MOBA, like League of Legends,
mm-hmm.
then it's hard to have it, to introduce it to a new player, and it sort of is a detriment to it, to the wider audience. But then again, to the dedicated audience, there's a lot that you can do in this game. There's a lot of game in this game.
Yeah.
A lot of fun to be had. And that's really for those spikes, mm-hmm. again, that this is designed for.
And it is true that sort of when designing a competitive game, there tends to be a lot more complexity to the cards and the objects in the game itself, more so than the rules.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's sort of true for almost every competitive game, because in a lot of these types of games, the ideal is to have a sort of cyclical metagame where players' personalities and archetypes and playstyles they enjoy can be viable and played against each other in sort of this natural web mm-hmm. or circle. But to do that, you need to have a lot of content already to allow for all those playstyles to be apparent.
Mm-hmm.
And
you also need a lot of players.
Yeah. And so I would say, if you want to make a competitive card game or board game or even video game, try not to make it your first game. I'm going to be honest.
Yeah.
I do want to say, though, that as far as this game goes, I did want to say at least one more thing.
Wait, okay, what are you going to say? Is this about the design?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Well, I wanted to say that, so this game is, like I said earlier, a similar type of game to a lot of what Level 99 does, and especially Brad Talton Jr., where they port a type of game to a board game.
Like a type of video game.
Port the feeling of it. Yeah. So BattleCon, like we said, is a fighting game, and from sort of a direct gameplay standpoint, that's true. I mean, we talked about strategically, there's a lot of guessing and open information with the intentions of your opponent being obscured, and a lot of second-to-second guessing and adjustments. But in sort of an abstract sense and theming, it fits that. Not just with sort of choosing two characters and duking it out on a battlefield,
mm-hmm.
but like how characters have super moves that can only be used sparingly, and movement and crossing up the opponent is a big deal, and like the idea that there's 20 beats is just a typical fighting game timer,
mm-hmm.
but that does work well in the game sense.
Mm-hmm.
And even like one aspect that a lot of that I've seen other games that try to port fighting games to card games kind of fail, kind of fall on is the like combo and, you know, attacking aspect. In this game, it's not as much like playing combos in a row. It's more just doing an ability that then gets you a better chance to do your next ability, next beat.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that you can, you do have like hit stun is a big deal to me as far as capturing that feel of a fighting game.
Yeah, I'll say that despite how complex this game is, it does an amazing job of being a fighting game video or fighting game board game.
Yeah.
Yeah, you definitely feel it. And even though it may seem like at a cursory glance that each beat is just like a punch, and so it might seem like it's sort of like a fighting game in slow motion, when you get into the turns and you start using the abilities that happen at the beginning of the beat, before you activate your abilities, after you activate your abilities, at the end of the beat, at the ante even, it's like you start to feel a full back and forth happen between both players in one beat, where each person is getting a chance to do their thing. And sometimes you get stunned and out of the game. Sometimes you fall out of range. But other times, both of you get to sort of do your deals. In a turn.
Admittedly, I've always wanted to see somebody animate what a fight in BattleCon would look like in a video game form, like a real-time BattleCon fight.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would help get the point across, for lack of a better word.
Mm-hmm. I want to say one thing about this game real quick before mm-hmm. the end of the episode, and that they do a good job with the design in differentiating the novice fighters from the master fighters
mm-hmm.
in their complexity and their skills. You'll see like the novice fighters have a lot less text on their cards. They're much more simple rather than having your character's text that describes all, you know, what you get for each mana point that you pay at the ante's turn that modifies your card. They just have pretty simple basic, like you get this and it's got one range, couple priority, couple attack damage, and it gives you a shield, and that's it. And that's good. And also, you know, the resources, because everybody has sort of like this resource that they have to manage. You know, yours is mana, mine was gold. The early fighters, or the novice level fighters, they only translate their resources into very simple bonuses. So one fighter just spends their resource to move one space. Mm-hmm. Another one spends it to get some guard. You know, they're not really converting one resources into a number of other complicated resources. Yours converted into many different things per ability. Mine converted into cards that were permanent buffs to me, but I had access to them at all times. So they do a good job there for novices. And if you do get the game and you're totally inexperienced with it, definitely try just stick with the novice tier fighters at first. Like, more than any other game, you know, don't dive in head first because yeah. it can be a lot. Definitely stick with just the novice for maybe one or two games and then move your way up.
And another element of how it distinguishes novice all the way to master is that the novice characters just have less pieces for the characters.
Right, exactly.
Like, other than the tokens, they don't have much, but as you go down, characters will get extra cards that do stuff.
Sometimes they'll get extra tokens that go yeah. on the board with you.
And well, so to be fair, there is one character in the novice flight that has another token on the board,
but it's just one token.
Yeah, and she doesn't have anything else, like other resources.
Yeah.
But like, there's even a character in the master flight that just has like 25 cards instead of the usual 14, just to swap out whenever between games.
Yeah.
Which I looked at that character and I was gonna play it, but then I was like, I don't have time right now to look through all these.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, the Johnny in me that likes to solve puzzles in games wanted to go back and figure out what the best combination of those for my playstyle would be.
Mm-hmm. To talk about the visual design of the game, the illustrations are crazy good.
Yeah.
Whoever they use as their illustrator is really, like, they look like Final Fantasy 1 and 2, like the box art for those games. They're very, very, like, they have a very Japanese aesthetic to them, but they're very, like, intense. They have a lot of contrast, a lot of flowing costume pieces about them. The characters look really cool. The rest of the game, and this is sort of, I find this with a lot of level 99 games, is that it's kind of washed out and basic. A lot of pastel colors and a lot of drop shadows and stuff.
Yeah.
But it's clean, so you can read it. And the way that they designed the bases and the style cards is they have a border missing so that the two cards can be joined together visually. And you can see, like, you know, the priorities match up, so it's easy to add priorities together and easy to add ranges and powers together. So there is that, which is nice. And the illustrations are really cool. And the game comes with, each fighter has a little cardboard standee that you use, for that character, and you put it on the board and move it around.
Yeah, it actually comes with the little stand-up disc parts.
Right.
But I don't use those.
Yeah, we don't use them. You can just easily slide them around flat on the board.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about, are there any similar games? You can check out other level 99 games, like, we mentioned Pixel Tactics.
I especially like Millennium Blades.
Oh, but this is not a similar to Battlecon. I mean, it's similar in that it attempts to take one thing and make it into a board game. Not at all like Battlecon. It's a different kind of complicated, because it attempts to turn a trading card game. It's the
trading card game lifestyle.
Right. It turns a trading card game lifestyle, being like a tournament grinder and a collector and whatever,
going to the shop, opening packs,
and makes that a video game, which, you know,
board game.
Or a board game. It makes that a board game. But more like Battlecon is like Pixel Tactics, where it's also a 1v1 game where you assemble like a Final Fantasy party to fight another Final Fantasy party. In like a army arrangement, like a 3x3 army grid, attacking from the back and from the middle and from the front.
Right. I know David Serlin is another designer that likes to use this sort of porting style. He did Yomi, which is a similar concept of a fighting game made into a card game.
Mm-hmm.
But that one is based more around, from what I understand, just sort of traditional, like, one-upping with numbers, sort of poker style. But he also made Codex, which is sort of a real-time strategy game turned into a card game.
Mm-hmm. I was going to mention Codex.
Yeah.
And that's a game where it's kind of like a deck-building game?
Sort of.
Or a hand-building game?
Sort of. It has deck-building elements.
Right. It's a deck-building game, but instead of buying from a trade row or anything, each player has, like,
a spell book.
A spell book that you purchase cards out of, almost like a binder of trading cards.
Yeah.
And each player has a unique binder to them that they buy their cards out of and add to their deck and then deploy and fight with, like a card game. Yeah, I was going to mention Codex is very similar to this. It's another 1v1 game. And the different armies have different spell books, so there's sort of that aspect where, you know, who you choose will determine your play style in interesting ways.
Yeah. Other than that, I do want to give another mention to Food Chain Magnate.
Okay.
Which... I think I've brought up on the podcast before about how so close it is to StarCraft.
But it's
not. You're playing a fast food restaurant empire.
Okay, you know, I'm going to make a rule. No more mentioning Food Chain Magnate until you get it in the mail and we play it.
Okay.
Okay, it's in the mail, right? You ordered it?
Well, I don't know if it's in the mail, but it is pre-ordered and paid.
Okay.
So whenever it gets printed.
No more mentioning Food Chain Magnate and how much it's like StarCraft. even though you finished a game of neither, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, but I will say, another game that is a card game that isn't super, like, close to another style of game, but it is very thematic and flavorful and plays well at two players, is Smash Up. A game where players take, like, archetypes of trope type of characters, like zombies, pirates, vampires, robots. You take two of those, shuffle them together, and that's your deck that you play the game with. And the game is sort of like capturing territories to get points.
All right.
That one has a similar competitive card game feel, but it's actually kind of a lot easier to learn at times.
All right.
All right.
Thank you for listening to our episode. Thank you that for was, listening. Again, our episode on BattleCon Devastation of Indines. So if you like that episode, you can like us on social media. We are on Facebook and Twitter at BG Broscast. We have a website where we post our episodes. That's bgbcast.com.
Yep.
Our friends Chris and Roger have a website as well where they host our podcast and their own. That website is entertainthegeeky.com. We sell our board games there, or our games. We haven't actually made a board game yet. we sell our games there. Right now we have on sale a game called Merle's Truck Stop in Maine. That's a one-page role-playing game. And soon we will have a new game.
We have some exciting news.
Yes.
Finally.
We usually at this point say we have another game and we're so excited to tell you about it, but we can't tell you about it right now.
But we can tell you about it now.
We
are so excited.
Everybody, listen up. We should put a notice at the beginning of the episode like, hey, listen to the end for their exciting announcement where we actually talk about the game. So Matthew, what is the name of the game that we are releasing?
The game we are releasing is Conniving Cooks.
Conniving Cooks.
It is a bluffing and deduction card game for 2 to 5 players. And it is a game in which each player is a server at a 5-star restaurant. And you want to make the best impression for your boss and the cooks in the kitchen. However, the cooks are trying to trick you and make you unable to correctly serve dishes.
Right. So
in essence, it is a game where you're trying to serve the correct dishes to the guests at a table and mess up your opponent so that they can't serve the correct dishes.
Right. It's kind of like Clue, but it's fast paced. It has
this tense poker, like, prediction element.
Yeah. It's lower stakes thematically because you're just serving dishes to a patrons and there hasn't been a murder, but it almost feels higher stakes.
It can get very tense.
Yeah, it's a quick game and you want to come out on top when you're playing it. Yeah, so Conniving Cooks. So next month, which is
April,
we are going to do a Kickstarter with our friends Chris and Roger. So look forward to that. The Kickstarter is not just to publish our game, but it's to kickstart our budding board game company, which is Entertain the Geeky Games, or EG Games for short. So look out for that Kickstarter in April. We'll have more details going forward, but most of the money we earn from that Kickstarter will go to publishing our very first card game, Conniving Cooks. And that's the exciting news. We hope you're excited too. So stay posted for that, and keep on listening for new episodes from us.
Yeah, and hopefully in those new episodes, we'll keep giving you information about our sweet new game.
Or we'll just keep giving you the same information, just to keep generating that hype.
Either way.
Either way.
You'll have to listen.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
Thank you.